Would you introduce yourselves, please?
Hi, we're good strangers. I'm Connor.
I'm Niamh.
I'm Kevin.
Okay, I need help with the female co-singer's first name.
Oh, Niamh.
Niamh.
I love this. Yeah.
It's as simple as that.
Irish.
Yeah. It's as simple as that.
N-E-E-V, Niamh.
Yeah.
But it's that simple. Oh my God, I would have done. Yeah.
I've got that plenty of times down.
I'll bet you have. So here's what I know. You two, you and Connor, have been best friends since age 3. We're going to talk about the Midlands because I need to know where that is, and so does everybody else. 5-piece since 2021, 2017. You kind of became this 80s synth influenced pop writing session machine thing. You moved to Berlin in 2019. You wrote this EP. You went back to Ireland and now you have the whole gang. That's what I've
That's
got.
It.
That's it.
That's it in a nutshell. Yeah.
We're done.
We're indeed done.
We're done.
Lovely meeting you, Dennis.
Lovely meeting you.
It's been really fun. Thank you so much. Indie band. I know you have a publicist because you got to me. Do you have a manager? Do you have a label? Do you have any of that stuff?
We have nothing. We literally are very much independent. We have nothing.
Does it look like we have management?
but you have a publicist.
Yeah.
So how does that happen?
Well,
you
pay them and hope they do their job. No, we heard, we got Kevin, our PR's contact through our producer, actually, Alex Borwick, who produced the record.
Which we're going to go there. That you have. That you did. That you have big time. Yes.
Well, you pay them too. But
you pay everybody.
You get on better with than others, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Nothing's for free here. You meet great people and you want to work together more, of course.
Got it. So, but as an indie band, and I saw you were very excited about getting 10,000 plays. So let's just go backwards for a second. I mean, you wouldn't be here if I didn't hear this and say, this is good music. I like it. They know what they're doing. They've put craft into it. They've spent the time. Does everybody still have their day job?
Yeah.
No.
Kind of.
I don't anymore. I left it. I kicked the bucket with that.
What was the day job?
I worked in a call center.
I have done that.
I worked for the Irish Postal Service. So.
Oh my gosh.
So
hello, my package has not made it.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
And that was my job to kind of tell you where your package was, which oftentimes you didn't know. So it was a lot of people. Yeah, you're just getting constantly given out all the time. It's not very fun.
Well, yeah, kind of. I'm kind of a jack of all trades. My main job, I suppose, would be a carer. And I also work like in an adventure centre. I kind of manage the food.
This is so not America. You work in an adventure centre. Only there would you call it an adventure center. Is this a place with video games and pinball?
No, it's like bog hopping.
Have
you ever heard of a bog?
We make the turf.
No, please. This is great.
It's like it's an outdoor
activity center.
Yeah.
Oh,
it is not Disneyland.
Go kayaking and bog hopping and.
Wait. What is bog hopping?
Okay, so bog is like, you know, which we get fuel from. It's like turf is made out of bog.
It's a type of land.
Yeah. And it's basically like swampy and it's all muddy and basically like kids just jump in and do obstacle courses in the mud.
Yeah.
It's quite fun.
And the parents go, son, I'm not letting you in the car.
Exactly, yeah.
Well, no, we hose them down and all that. Yeah.
That does not sound good.
Oh, it is good.
Great crack. It's
great. We hose them down. Oh my gosh.
I mean, you get a chance to get dirty without mommy giving out to you.
Oh my gosh. As a teenager for a few days.
Yeah. Unbelievable.
It's good for your skin as well.
It's good for your skin. Aging.
Oh, it's going to be big over there.
I have learned so much.
I work in a tech company, and we kind of manage commuting for companies.
So you have the most legit job of the three.
He's the grown up of the band. Yes.
Yeah, recently, you're the most legit recently, job.
Yeah. We work with a good few companies in LA, actually.
Formal training. Who has formal training? Who doesn't have formal training? Who went to uni? Who didn't go to uni? All that stuff.
I studied English in university, which is handy for the owl songwriting.
That's exactly what you're supposed to. Yeah, perfect. Are. Okay, good.
Mm.
And did you finish? Did you finish the uni?
I did. I managed just about to finish finish college. But yeah, it was. I love college.
There you go.
I love going to university.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
I went and did. I actually was a teacher first. I was a teacher for a few years, and I didn't like that. So
another legit job.
I studied music and theology, and then I really didn't like that, and then couldn't deal with teenagers. They're difficult, you know.
These are great songs. These are what I call songs. Somehow, some way, and the reason you're here is that you figured it out. You understand the concept of a hook. You understand the concept of a middle eight. You understand that you don't have to do verse, chorus, chorus, verse, verse, chorus, 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 verse, verse, verse. But sometimes it's not bad to do that. So where do you think that got into your head? And do you agree, by the way, that it's in your head?
Yes and no. I think, yes. Yeah. So you're always like, I think when you're creating music or songwriting in particular, I think you always have an idea of where you want it to go, where you want the song to be. And I think that comes from the music you listen to more than, you know, rather than something you learn. But it's the process for us varies. There's no rules to songwriting. And I think what we try to do lately as a group is trying to, when we're coming to write songs, is not kind of follow the stereotypical verse, chorus, bridge, chorus, outro. We kind of just went with what sounded good in the rehearsal room first and then in the studio. And I think that's what really kind of was a natural progression of just feeling the bits, and our producer Alex really helped us with that as well, and kind of making the best parts kind of stay in. It's more taken out than actually than keeping in often cases. If that makes sense.
I think it's fair to say though, like with Connor's songwriting now, it's kind of a lot of these have been more storytelling as well, rather than because it's not about getting to that repeated chorus. It's, you know, where you've got that hook. Connor happens to be a very hooky songwriter, like, and there's great melodies and great hooks in it. But so it doesn't need to keep going back to a repeated hook as much. It's more about telling the story, and then kind of what we're doing as a band is just really setting an atmosphere under it.
I have a thing, and there's a very American reference, and I'm going to go into a deep place here, but I have a way of doing it that makes it fun. Okay. I call it a Tootsie Roll Pop. Now, do you have any idea what a Tootsie Roll Pop is?
We don't get Tootsie Rolls over here.
No,
in
you
Ireland,
don't.
So. I don't even want to guess what that is.
So a Tootsie Roll is this just little weird chocolate wrapped thing. But it's gooey chocolate. And you'll look this up right after this and you'll be like, wow, this is cool. But a Tootsie Roll Pop is a sucker, a lollipop, that on the outside has got this, you know, it's cherry, it's orange, it's grape. It's a typical lollipop, but they've put the gooey, dark chocolate center in the middle of it. And to get to the dark, gooey center, you have to crunch your way through the sugar. These are the kind of songs I love. They are warm and fuzzy and sweet on the outside, and they are so effing dark on the inside that as you're getting your cavities from the sugar and you're chewing on the dark stuff, you almost want to cry, but you're also joyful because someone's telling a story that is so painful that it brings you joy because now you can have catharsis with them. But all the stuff that you've been through, I think you feel it really deeply. I know you feel it really deeply. And I'll get all of this stuff out of the way. Neve, you know, you losing who you lost. You know, breakups. Coming out.
I love that bit of the Tootsie Roll.
And writing these joyous, big songs about some of the most painful shite that mankind's ever invented and feeling it. But the catharsis has got to be great.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's it. That's kind of what we went for in a weird way. We wanted to make a deep kind of emotional record, but also wanted to keep it kind of enlightening, if that makes sense. We wanted to have a kind of more sad songs that sound happy.
You know, well, that's exactly where I'm going. And right. And now you're going to go in search of a Tootsie Roll Pop because...
Yeah.
No, because the best songs, like just a song that's happy, 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 it's not a good meal.
No.
It's kind of like, it's like an appetizer. But then a song that is completely, you walk away deadly, you don't necessarily go back to it, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You're right with the cathartic thing. Like, I mean, how many times have we, you know, sang those songs together and been like, you know, might have a few drinks or whatever and you end up just singing them and you're just, we keep going back to them and back to them again. You know, those songs have been sang so many times like that before ever going recording and they're painful, you know, and Connor's writing them and the lyrics and there's everybody knows what it's can feel what it's about, but you can also relate it to yourself completely as well. And I'm presuming you kind of felt that, well, maybe yourself when you're listening to them, if you seem to have really listened to them, which is
I really listened to them,
you know. Yeah. so yeah, you can actually really feel that, and a lot of the lyrics mean a lot to all of us. So
We used to cry, actually. Me and Neve, Neve used to come over to... Well, I was staying when we were back home from Berlin.
We moved back from Berlin, and the reason we came back from Berlin was because of COVID. We were coming home for a few gigs at the March in 2020, and the whole country was shutting down, so we had to stay put. And over here, I don't know, each country had different rules, but we could only, like, you know, have your... family that you were
right
to, you know. So I was kind of breaking the rule by going past 2 kilometers to meet Connor on a Thursday night and
for a few glasses of wine.
See what I mean? Rebel over here,
you know. He'd just say, okay, here, I have this song I wrote during the week, you know, check it out, see what you think. And we'd sing these songs and I'd
put drink our wine
vocals
and cry
to them, and we'd drink our wine and we'd bawl crying, like, you know what I mean? Like, really heartbreaking. You know what I mean? Yeah. We really put the pain in there.
So I understand all this, but when you, and this is just, you know, use of language, when you talk about mental health, I'm not looking at the three of you and thinking there's any danger there. It's that you've really just felt it big.
I mean, well, I can't speak for everybody, but I struggle big time with my mental health. You must just call us on a good day. No, but it does. It you can mask yourself very easily into, I think, society, or, you know, when you're around people. But also, I think we're around our friends all the time. You know, we're always up for a good time, and even though we are going through personal difficulties and mental health struggles, we have that kind of family,
but you got that. There's a lot more music to come from Good Strangers.
Yes.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. We were actually planning to go to the studio this week, but Luke, our bass player, shout out to Luke, he is going to be a daddy this week, so we were cutting a bit fine. Yeah, the first Good Strangers baby.
My favorite songwriter is Paul Simon. I think Paul Simon is the greatest living songwriter, because he is a storyteller. And I have everything he's written, every inch of it, counting the cars on the New Jersey Turnpike, we've all come to look for America, right?
Yeah.
Now, I put that right next to, we sat in the bar and we talked about the things we used to like, and we romanticized the pain. You have just hit me. You've got funerals and empty dance halls. You've got all of these images. How much of this have you lived, and how much of this are you storytelling?
It's quite a bit of it is true, but I always say about songwriting, it's like any movie. Do you know what I mean? A movie that's based on true events.
But yeah. I think that line itself, I've romanticized the pain, that says a lot about what you're doing as a songwriter. Like.
Yeah, you play around, but all the general, you know, the core of the story is true. But, you know, from listening to it, you think, oh God, he needs help. Is he okay? But I suppose you just kind of expand on the emotions and try and kind of make it sound. We purposely went out to make a sad record, and I think we did well in that. But we did well in also covering it up with nice kind of sounds to make it less kind of, because as Niamh was saying earlier, when we were playing the acoustic guitar, they were really bare and raw, and they were nearly too sad. But going back to your question, it relates to kind of true stories, but they're dramatized. I think writing, like going back to the whole mental health thing, having something like writing music or even playing music, is we're lucky because we can actually kind of channel all the feelings into the music or into
yeah, you've
the
got an outlet, and this is the thing.
Yeah,
I'm taking a break from my day. This is my outlet. This is one of my outlets, and it's a great.
Yeah, exactly.
It's hanging out. It's a great outlet.
It's talking. Talking's really
well. You
really
have
good.
To. Yeah,
really
exactly.
Yeah.
It's good for everybody. Man, what a beautiful sounding record! What did you bring in? How far were your demos along?
They were pretty much there. They were. Alex was very good because he kind of let you kind of run amok a bit and have free reign of the song, but also rein in when needed to, if that makes sense. And he really got what we were trying to do in terms of the whole juxtaposition of making sad songs happy. That was the brief kind of he'd given, but he's such a brilliant ear. He really lets you play, like, be yourselves in the studio, but hones you in. He's just an all-rounder, really. He's unbelievable in the studio.
I think you just trust Alex, and that's such an important thing. It's like, you know, you're playing music that nobody apart from yourself has ever heard, but if you're showing it to someone like Alex, and Alex's like, yeah, no, it's good, you're like, okay, good.
And he
we
listens.
Can be confident with this and
him.
Do it.
You had a good, you, Niamh and Alex were besties in the studio.
Yeah, well, because I don't play instruments, so I'm in with Alex when we're kind of getting the start of it with tempos, the tempos right, you know, and like he's just so interested in it.
Yeah.
He's literally a member of the band. He just knows exactly what he's at with it, with us, you know. He knows exactly what we're kind of looking for, the end goal, you know.
Okay, so are you aware that the opening riff for Reno is a doppelganger for one of the greatest songs ever? There's a song called Behind the Walls of Sleep by the Smithereens.
I've never heard that.
Actually,
you're going to have
to
look it up. But the Smithereens were an 80s, 90s band. And just look it up because it got
what's
into
the
you.
Song called the Smithereens?
Behind the Wall of Sleep. Just pull it up on anything.
Oh my God.
Oh,
exactly.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So good. Actually, I'm going
to
say
I'm now introduced you to a band you will love, by the way.
Yeah.
I'm liking that already.
You want this band to get big. You want this band to get a big audience. You want this band to be noticed. Yes? No?
Yeah, well, you want
to... about, like, you know, we want to be successful. Definitely.
And what is the definition? I mean, so is the definition of that just the right people hearing you and not necessarily playing stadiums to a bunch of people with bad sound? Or is it...
No, I mean, I'd never turn down a big audience.
Or is it, we're going to play stadiums and we're going to demand great sound? Yeah. Which is what I would
no.
do.
I feel like... we all want to do it as our career. That'll be yeah. the, you know, that's successful.
That's
to me.
What I'm getting to.
Do you know, it's not about playing big massive arenas or even playing, you know, big venues. It's more so what we would like ideally is as many people as possible that kind of to have a listen to the song. If they like it. We can't wait to go back to the studio first and foremost.
And make
that's
more.
Our next goal, make more. We have a long list of songs that we. I've started to kind of work on and that's the next kind of thing. We're not really thinking like macro level, we're going to be playing in big venues. It's more so just to get build up our catalog and build up our fan base in a kind of modern way, which is kind of a lot of the times now without the label.
I have invented a thing called a musical sandwich, and what it is two of your songs on the outside and then songs by others in between,